My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome again to Inside United. I'd like to do a rerun of an interview I did with Police Chief Lieutenant Anthony Reese of the Union Township Police Department in the Cincinnati area of Ohio. I recorded this originally in November of 2019. I've gotten to know Lieutenant Reese quite well over the past 5 years. He has spoken to ABC students at the home office about the community service work of the police. He is a highly regarded individual in our community and speaks here about the personal side of the life of a policeman. My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to Inside United. On this podcast, we talk to people about what's going on inside the United Church of God, but we also talk to interesting people that we cross paths with. Our guest today is Lieutenant Anthony Reese of the Union Township Police. And Tony Reese and I have met through Rotary Club for the past 4 years or so and become well acquainted with one another. Welcome to Inside United.
Thank you, Vic. Appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you here, and we're grateful to have you take the time to talk about some things of common interest. We tighten up with law enforcement because we know that this person has power of the government behind him to arrest you, to stop you, to invade your privacy, so to speak. You know, he has all these powers. And so much has been made in the past couple of years. There's been a lot of negative publicity about police. Please tell us about your values.
You hit the nail on the head earlier. Let me just touch on one topic that you brought up, is that people tighten up when the police walk in the room. And you're right, we have a lot of powers, a lot of discretion at our hands as far as putting people in jail, charging them with crimes, doing things to them that can really alter their life. First of all, most of our officers, all of our officers, are just normal people. When we're off duty, we're just like the next person. You know, we like to go out to dinner. We like to have a drink every now and then. We like to be with friends. We like to celebrate and have fun. So behind that stern demeanor that you see a lot of times is really a quite normal person, which is why I like to be involved in things like our Citizen Police Academy, because it brings the community in and allows them to see that side of us. But on the other hand, we do have a great responsibility, and it's definitely one that our officers don't take lightly. To be a police officer in today's society, and I think this is what drew me to that calling, you have to be impartial. You have to be empathetic. You have to be willing to listen. And a lot of times that side of police officers does not come across in the TV and through the media. You know, we have to go out to people's homes and counsel them. You know, very few of our contacts with the public result in arrests or some type of enforcement. A lot of times we're counselors. We give guidance to people. We try to help them mediate problems with their fellow neighbors or other people in the community that they're having a problem with. So you have to have those qualities. You have to be able to talk to people. You have to be able to listen. You have to be understanding. Not everybody needs to go to jail. Not everybody needs to get a $160 ticket, which is why the power and the authority that's given to us is a great responsibility, and it's one that not every person out there can handle. Unfortunately, the media does catch, you know, law enforcement at its worst possible moments, and of course, I hear those stories when I run into people. I get people's what I call, quote unquote, their worst cop stories. And I tell them, you know, unfortunately, law enforcement is like any other position in the world. Accountant, you know, corporate president, waiter, you name it. Some people just don't do the job the way they should. And there are people like that in law enforcement, unfortunately. In my opinion, very few. And on my department, zero. Mm-hmm. And I'm directly in charge of that hiring. And we look for certain qualities in police officers. And I want somebody that's made mistakes in life and learned from them. I want a normal person that's led a normal life. I don't want that person that sees things in black and white. And if you're 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, you get a ticket. And if, you know, you broke the law to the letter of the law, you automatically go to jail. That's not how life works. There's a reason that people do things. I'm very interested in why you did something. And if there's a good reason behind it, maybe I can work with you. You know, not everybody needs to go to jail. Unfortunately, a lot of people do, though, and sometimes that's just, you know, something we have to do. And it's a great power, as you mentioned before, Vic. And I take that responsibility very serious, and our officers do, too.
Well, I know that when you talked about the kind of person a policeman is, what I was thinking in my mind, that's what our ministers are supposed to be. You know, a counselor, a helper. not a person who's a looming figure that intimidates people, but a true servant. And so much of what a police officer does as a public servant is very much like a spiritual servant, you know, in the ministry. That was very, very interesting to me.
Yeah, and I like to mentor and counsel our new officers and remind them when we hire them that when they go out on the street, they represent the Union Township Police Department. They represent me. They represent our police chief. And one of the best parts of my day is when I get an email from a resident that said, hey, I just wanted to drop you a line and say, you know, Officer Smith did an incredible job with me. You know, I was involved in an accident. It was one of the worst days of my life. And he was there to support me. He helped me. He was very informative on where I go from here. And, you know, we see this stuff every day as police officers. But what we may not realize is that for that person, it's the worst day of their life. We're catching them in a moment where they've been victimized or, you know, in a moment where unfortunately they have to be arrested. It's a very stressful time for them. And I have gotten comments from people that were arrested, and they say, you know, he treated me well with respect, and, you know, I didn't like that I was arrested, but, you know, at the end of the day, I can't complain. Mm-hmm. To me, that says it all. Those guys are out there doing their job when they do that.
Well, I know that I've been stopped a few times.
You
know,
as have I.
You know, and I know that you've talked also about how you don't want to be arresting people in your neighborhood.
You know?
No. you have a respect, you know, for people. And you like you said, you understand the trauma and not the enjoyment of the position. Mm-hmm. We tell people to be servants, and not to have dominion over your faith, but to be helpers of their joy.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't ever want to see an officer take joy in arresting somebody. Now, I take pride. When I was a detective and a patrolman, I took pride if I could solve a case and help a victim out and hold a person accountable, because that's my job. You know, if you did wrong by, you know, the laws that govern all of us, then you are to be held accountable. And if I can hold you accountable and help the victim maybe get their property back that was stolen, or at least give them their day in court to where, you know, they're heard, their side of the story is heard, you know, that's our job, and I get a lot of enjoyment out of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll tell you a quick story. One of the best days in my life in law enforcement, I was a detective, and I'll make a long story short, but we had a burglar that had broken into over 35 houses in Union Township and Anderson Township. Mm. And when we finally caught this guy, we recovered a lot of the jewelry that he and we laid it out at our police department, and we invited all our victims from Anderson and Union Township to come in and try to identify their property. And we got, I would say, over 70% of the property back to these people, which is really unheard of with burglaries. And this lady came up to me, and she was probably in her 70s, and, you know, she came right up to me and unannounced, and she just gave me a big hug. And I think I'm a pretty personable person. I gave her a hug back, and she said, I just want you to know, and she had a tear in her eye. She said, I want you to know something. I don't care so much that my house was broken into, I'm not happy, but they stole a pendant that my mother left me and that her mother left her. And to get this back, I never thought I'd see it again. You don't know how much that means to me. And, you know, that just made my day. And that was probably 15 years ago, and I still think about it to this day.
It's wonderful. Yeah. One thing I'd like to ask you about is, you know, you've been in law enforcement for 21 years. What changes have you seen in the public towards just values as far as law is concerned from what we've saw as far as any number of things from just violent types of crimes to drugs and so forth? I know that when I was in high school, I know that there weren't the drugs that they are there now. Could you comment about what you see overall?
I can. You know, it's no secret to anybody that the heroin epidemic, the opioid epidemic, is as bad as it's ever been. I tell people when I talk about this topic, I just talked about it at UC Claremont last week to some students, it's really the only thing I've come across in my 21 years in law enforcement that scares me. And it scares me because I just don't see a resolution to it. And I know people don't want to hear that, but, you know, I don't want to, you know, I want to be honest with people. It's something that scares me because I don't see the end of it. Usually things come and we, you know, we find a way to battle it and combat it, and then it goes away and something else pops up, and that's our job. But this thing, we haven't been able to put it to rest. And the scary thing with the opioid epidemic is that it's directly related to property crime. In other words, the people that are addicted to opioids, a lot of them turn to burglary, theft, breaking and entering of businesses to support their habit, and it's an endless chain. And now you have people in the community that aren't involved, and they don't do heroin. They don't even have children that do heroin or opioids, but they're directly affected because their businesses are being broken into. Mm-hmm. So it's a constant chain. One thing supports the other. And, you know, it's definitely affecting all of society. But to answer your question about values, you know, I haven't seen a lot of the change in that. I work in the suburbs. I'm not I'm not an urban city police mm-hmm. officer. Our community is very supportive. I haven't really seen a lack of respect. If anything, every day I get a thank you. I get people that want to buy me lunch or buy me a cup of coffee, which, you know, obviously I appreciate that very much. I think the community holds us in high esteem, and that means the world to me. But there are a lot of people that are working, a lot of moms and dads working, a lot of kids that, you know, maybe aren't, and I'm a victim of this myself, a lot of kids that maybe aren't having dinner every day at the table with mom and dad, mm-hmm. like I did growing up and like you probably did, mm-hmm. Vic. Mm-hmm. You know, people just involved. And I think that's what it really comes back to is mom and dad, you know, raising the child, disciplining the child. Hopefully the school is doing that too. And that absenteeism sometimes when the kids are let to run amok, you know, when they get to be teenagers and they get to be adults and they haven't had that stability, they haven't had that that discipline, you know, bad things are going to happen, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, it's up to everybody. It's up to the police. It's up to the educators. It's up to the parents, you know, to make sure that these kids are being raised right and that we instill those values.
What about our youth in high school, our 14, 15-year-olds, and the types of things they get involved in, and with social media exacerbating crimes? I'd like to hear about that.
Yes. Everybody's got their opinion on social media. And I don't want to be a hypocrite because I engage in social media. I have a Facebook page, and I use it for a lot of the reasons other people use it, to connect with mm-hmm. people, to see how families and friends are doing, see photos. But in my opinion, social media is a big instigator out there. You know, we were just talking about this the other night at the police department. I think, you know, social media, I don't think it was its intent, but I think it breeds contempt. It breeds jealousy and envy. You know, this person's got more than me. Mm-hmm. Jealousy and, you know, people use social media in a way that it shouldn't be used, sometimes to be hurtful. God knows there's a lot of crimes out there that are exacerbated and committed through social media. So it's really something, it's part of life now. It's not going anywhere. It's a powerful part of life. And we have to find a way to mitigate that as a police department. We have to find a way to, it's out there, we have to deal with it, but we have to try to control it somewhat when it comes to law enforcement and, you know, enforcing mm-hmm. the law in the community.
Because we keep hearing things about, you know, the selling of drugs, for example, through social media, through kind of a dark network. We hear about bullying, you know,
yes.
and threatening of people. And I suppose the police has to be, or law enforcement has to be a step ahead of that, or at least in concert with that.
We do. And one of the big things we've turned to with social media and with the heroin epidemic is, you know, prevention is hard because it's so tempting to use both. We've resorted to education. We try mm-hmm. to get to these kids beforehand. You know, for example, I gave a talk at a local high school a year or so ago about the ramifications of social media. And the message I tried to get across to the teenagers was, it's okay to take a picture and put it out there and share it with your friends. But just remember something. When you take a photo and you put it out there, you know, depending on what you photograph, I mean, mm-hmm. we all know sometimes these kids, you know, take photographs that, you know, they shouldn't be putting out there of themselves or other people. When you put something out there like that, the minute you hit send, you have lost all control of that photo. Okay, that's going to reach the person you intended it to reach, and then it might reach 5 more, and then it might reach 100, and then it might reach 1,000, and you can never get those pictures back. And years down the road, you may be applying for a job or a job interview, and you may make comments on social media. We've all seen that in the news. Mm-hmm. People resigning your positions, especially in law enforcement. And you can't get that stuff back when you put it out there, when it goes viral. Mm-hmm. So we've really tried to preach to them, use social media for the right reasons. Be careful what you put on social media. Be careful your personal information that you put out there. Because mm-hmm. the ne'er-do-wells, the people that are out there, you know, that are up to no good, they're going to use that stuff. And mm-hmm. and that stuff can catch up to you in a bad way mm-hmm. sometimes.
In Indianapolis, they had a huge campaign when I still lived there, which was billboards all over the place. Think before you post.
Exactly.
It was the schools, and I think even law enforcement at that time, that was waging a campaign to educate young people who don't think twice about posting something that, as you say, will stay out there forever.
Yes.
And will affect their job and their career. I know that when we have camp directors applied, when we have camp staff apply to us, we check to see what their history is. You know, we go back to their Facebook account, to their Instagram, and see mm-hmm. how they come across to others.
You can't put stuff out like that and expect people not to see that, potential employers. Or, you know, a college you're trying to get it to, you can't expect people to see that and not, you know, judge you, yeah. judge you to a certain extent.
I'd like to turn to another subject here. In our country, we are terrorized, you know, with the shootings that have taken place. It seems that every week we hear about either one or two people being killed to dozens of people being killed. And I'd like to hear what you have to say as far as preparations, as far as how to even calm the public down, because there are some people that are very, very terrified of this type of thing.
Yeah, and they should be. And I'm not, and I don't say that to cause, you know, I don't say that to cause panic with the public. You know, I'm fairly confident that that's never going to happen at a school in my jurisdiction. I can't speak for others, but nonetheless, we have to be prepared for it, and we train a lot for it. We train a lot for it. We train twice a year on firearms, and unfortunately, just this last year, we trained on a school shooting scenario because, Vic, that's the world we live in. Mm-hmm. So I'm fully confident that our police departments are prepared for that, and I pray to God every day that it never comes to that. But the bottom line is there are people in this world, you know, that are gonna do bad things. And to go back to the social media thing, we have to make sure as a society we're not putting stuff out there to encourage people to do that. And you hit on something earlier, Vic, with the bullying. You know, and how many times have these school shooters, we come to find out that they were kids that may have been bullied. And I'm not excusing what they did at all, not at all. But we can't afford to let our schools and society in general become a breeding ground for this hate and contempt because we allowed these kids to be bullied. That's a big big thing on my radar. Is mm-hmm. the bullying. First of all, it's horrible, you know, to see these kids go through this. And second of all, the damage that you do, you know, in just maybe just a couple years of school, the damage to a person's psyche and their personality can last a lifetime. And then you hear things like the shootings that we have in the schools. And, you know, I can't think, it's one of my biggest fears is that, you know, we'll have to deal with one of those someday. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine as a parent, you know, finding out that there was a shooting at my kid's school. And I can't imagine, well, I can, unfortunately, but I don't ever want to imagine our police department responding to it. We're prepared. Believe mm-hmm. me, we're prepared. But it's certainly something we don't ever want to go through.
One thing I was trying to lead into a conversation was about the change in the family structure, in a way, and how families are. You know, we're a church, and, you know, you work with churches, I'm certain, you know. What advice can you give us as far as how even subjects to speak about? As far as families, as far as respect for law and that type of thing. Can you maybe give me a little bit of advice as to how, you know, even our leaders need to respond from your position as a police officer?
Well, I can speak to you as a police officer and I can speak to you as a parent. Mm-hmm. You have to talk to your kids. You know, ask them how their day went every day. You know, don't be one of those parents because kids are so busy now. Even, you know, the good kids that are out there staying active, they're involved in sports, they're involved in after school activities. They still need a parent, you know, asking them how their day went. You know, if there were bad things that happened to you, things that you're not happy about, let's talk about it. I think just that lack of communication, that lack of guidance from the parent plays a big part in it. That just being absent in your child's life. Yeah, you're taking them to their basketball practice or whatever, but I think we get so caught up, and I'm a victim of this, Vic. I'm a victim of this. You get so caught up in running your kids here and there and making sure they're involved in things, but when you're running them here and there, talk to them. Mm-hmm. I try to do that with my boys. Of course, you know, they don't want to talk to mom and dad a whole lot right now. They're teenagers. But, you know, I try to have a meaningful conversation with them, you know, about mm-hmm. what's going on in their life. And you'd be amazed sometimes what you hear back. And just letting them know that, hey, you know, your mom, we're here for you to talk to you if you need help through something to get, you know, if there's something you need help with that we can help you with to get you that help. If it's a tutor, kids, you know, I think we forget sometimes how hard it was growing up. And it's not getting any easier on kids. And social media is a big reason for that. It's hard to be a teenager nowadays and be a kid growing up. There's so much out there that can negatively, and they're so fragile. when they're young, and we have to support them.
You know, you kind of struck a couple of times in this conversation about some of the issues of jealousy and, you know, how people are. I don't know if this was that. I know that we were in high school, had boy-girl issues, you know. You have a crush on somebody, you like them, you know, you go with them, whatever, so to speak, and then you break up and so forth. And those things are still very much there. But there's so much else out there with people getting into each other's lives because of social media. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a phone. Everybody's got different ways within that phone how they communicate, mm-hmm. or their friends or inner friends or so forth. And I feel like you said the social media can make things worse rather than be a wonderful source of let's talk and communicate, because the talk and communication is not always good.
Well, and those devices lend to not communicating. I mean, I've seen kids texting each other from 10 feet away. And you want to say, put the phone away and have a conversation. And I think that's a big thing right now with kids growing up. You know, I worry, even with my kids, you know, one day, son, you're going to have to be in a job interview. And you're going to have to look somebody eye to eye and have a conversation with them. And these phones, you know, I've seen them at parties. And, you know, 10 of them are sitting there on the couch and they're all, you know, on their phones. Mm-hmm. And it kind of drives you nuts. And I think that today's technology has not helped us out in that regard, which, again, goes back to talking as a family. Mm-hmm. Put your phone down. We're going to have a conversation.
Well, I feel like that goes even into email. I mean, for us old timers, I feel like people have too much email going back and forth.
Where
I would like to, I know that I've told people, look, I don't want to talk to you about this on email. That's not a subject for email. I need to sit down and look you in the eye.
Absolutely.
And we need to talk it out and not have so many questions unanswered by what's there.
And technology, that, you know, that's where we're at. I have days where I come to work and it's 2 hours before I can get to my job, because I'm responding to emails. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Oh, one thing that when we found out that you're coming here, Diane, my secretary here, I told her about the K-9 unit.
Yes.
And she said, oh, wonderful. Is he going to bring them? I said, oh, I don't think so.
I dropped the ball on that when you told me.
Oh, no. No, but they were kind of fascinated by the, what do you do with your K-9s? Do you actually have one yourself? Or I mean, how does it work?
Well, we have two police dogs, Havoc and Chaos. Colorful names.
Havoc and Chaos.
Havoc and Chaos. really good dogs. And, you know, they're invaluable in this day and age. And a lot of people think of them as drug dogs, and they are. We use them for drug detection. We'll walk them around a car that we maybe have stopped on the highway out there just to make sure there's no drugs in the car. But they do so much more than that. You know, if we have somebody held up in the woods, or we have, you know, somebody that's just broken into a business, and we know, like a building like this, and we know they're somewhere in the business, we just don't know where. You know, it's very precarious to put our officers in a position where they're walking around a dark building, you know, and somebody could jump out at any minute, and we can just let that dog go. You know, and we announce to them, hey, we have a canine, we're going to let him off the leash if you don't present yourself. And you let that dog go, and they don't worry about being shot. They don't worry about somebody, you'd be around the corner, mm-hmm. ready to ambush them. They just go find the person. So in that regard, they're so invaluable. You know, on a positive note, we've used them to find Alzheimer's patients that have wandered away from home. Mm. We use them to find missing children that, you know, lost in the woods. You know, we had a gentleman a couple years ago that had walked away from his house in very cold conditions, very cold temperatures, and we found him near a lake, and the canine found him. And who knows what could have happened if it was another hour, 2 hours. So, you know, they're so multifunctional. They track, you know, we use them for drug detection. There's bomb dogs out there. They can smell bomb components if we have a situation where we have a bomb threat. So they serve so many functions for us. Mm-hmm. But the one misconception is, you know, they're family dogs. You know, our officers, Officer Perkins and Officer Holden, they both have dogs in their family, their own family mm-hmm. dogs, and they can take their canines home and they're interchangeable. You know, they'll play with each other, and, you know, both our officers have kids and wives, and, you know, they're good dogs, they're smart dogs, and they know when they're at work and they know when they're at home. And they know when it's time to go to work, and they get very excited when it's time to go to work. So I really get a kick out of them.
Well, Tony, it's been just very wonderful talking to you today.
Well, thanks for having me.
We really have appreciated your being here. I feel like when I'm at Rotary Club, you know, that, you know, we greet each other, you know, we have a very warm exchange, you know, we have a friendship. of course, all of us do. I think our Rotary Club is just a fantastic place where community leaders of all sorts, you know, come together. And it's been wonderful to have you here. And thank you so much for coming here.
Anytime. And as fascinating as you think I am, you don't realize how much I like to hear you at Rotary, because your travels around the world and the presentation you did last week, that's some interesting stuff. You know, I've never been outside of this country. And some of the stuff you've seen and the things that you're doing overseas through with in conjunction with Rotary and representing Rotary in the way you do, Vic, is pretty incredible.
Well, thank you. I'm humbled by that. I look upon myself as just a regular guy. I grew up in a regular family, and I grew up, you know, as a foreigner. You know, my parents came from war-torn Europe, and I just really feel very, very fortunate to live in this country and the freedoms that we have. So thank you very much for coming to Inside United. Please write to us at podcast@ucg.org. UCG.org. You can easily find us on our UCG website, UCG.org, and click on the podcast button on the main menu. You can also pick us up using your favorite podcast app, both on iOS and Android, and find Inside United. So thank you for joining us here today. Come back again soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.